is up 101 points. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from General Mills, whose Big G cereals bring 35 million servings of whole grain to American families every day. More at generalmills.com/NPR.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
We are just about halfway through our fiscal year, and your tax-deductible gift today will bring us closer to being halfway to this fiscal year's member support goal. It's an especially important goal given a recent cut in state funding. Right now, we're within $200,000. Keep us on track with a year-end gift of $50, $100, or $500. Give to WILL at willpledge.org or 217-244-9455. Thanks.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, FM 90.9 HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director today is Henry Frain. This afternoon, we open up the phone lines for questions about computers. This is our monthly Computers in You program. Your telephone calls about computers are invited. Join us with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Two guests join us this afternoon. They're with the University of Illinois. They're with CITES, that's Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services. Our guests are Debbie Flieger and Nick Baraglio. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Thanks for coming in this afternoon. Welcome.
It's nice to be here.
So I thought maybe we could begin, while we wait for our first caller this afternoon, to talk a little bit about Windows 7, launched earlier this year, just a couple months ago. It's been out in the world for a couple of months now. What's the word from users?
I honestly haven't seen a whole lot of Windows 7 reports. I've played with it quite a bit personally. Coming from a non-Windows background, I was actually pretty impressed with how smooth it is and how well it works.
How does it differ from XP and Vista? How is it new and improved?
I think there's some major changes under the hood, but they've also really refined the user interface quite a bit. It was one of the things I think they tried to do with Vista and kind of didn't quite make it there. But as far as making it really, really smooth looking and kind of elegant, they've done a much better job. And like I said, I was coming from a non-Windows background. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed with how well it worked.
Yeah, does it?
Well, Jim Irick, who's often here with me, he's chatting with us today on the line. So to answer our PC questions, and he says, you know, he's pretty happy with it. He's got it. He likes it. And he's a Windows person that's been using Windows for a long time, and he's got no issues with it. It doesn't seem very slow. And he says it's very similar to a Vista interface, but some things are easier, and he thinks it's very stable, which, as I know, is something that wasn't said when Vista first came out, so that's a nice change.
Okay. We've got a listener who's ready to join us this afternoon now on line one, so let's go and take this call. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I have a pretty, I hope, simple question. I opened my laptop this morning, and in the center towards...
I think we lost the caller. Let's try again. Let's see here. Henry Frain, our technical director, is going to check on this, and it looks like it just doesn't go. I don't know. Maybe he was on a cell phone or something, and it just...
Oh, maybe he can call back.
Yeah, just... blanked out on us. So anyway, listeners, if you've got a question, a comment about computers, join us this afternoon with a telephone call. No one waiting at the moment. 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Let's take another call now, or maybe it's the same one. Listener, line one, hi.
Hi, same guy.
Okay.
Icon on the screen, a light green background, shape of a battery with a leaf in front of it, and a circle, a red circle with a slash in front of the leaf. I have absolutely no idea, nor have I been able to find in my computer what that means.
Is this a PC, I assume?
PC.
Okay, and what does the icon look like again?
It's a square with a green background. It has a battery, or, you know, the shape of a battery, a leaf in front, like a leaf on a tree in front of that, and then in front of that it has a red circle slash.
A leaf like a tree. Do you have it plugged into a power source?
I do.
And it's still
giving. And the battery on the taskbar says fully charged.
And it won't boot at all.
Oh, well, I don't know. Yes, it, everything seems to work fine. I just have this icon that's sitting there on my desktop.
What version of Windows is this running?
7.
Windows 7. I'm not terribly familiar with that particular icon that you're seeing. Is this something, have you changed anything in the last, you know, since before this happened?
Let's see. The only thing I did was re-hook up with Comcast. I changed the modem.
Okay, so no software has been installed and no patches have been applied or anything?
No, it wasn't there last night. It was there when I opened it this morning.
Have you tried taking the... It's a laptop, right? Have you tried taking the batteries out while it's still pulled in, plugged in? And it might be trying to tell you that it's seeing a problem with the battery. If leave it plugged in and go ahead and unhook the battery, or shut it all the way down and unhook the battery and just bring it up on power and see if that symbol goes away. Then if it does, you know it's indicating something about the battery state. I'd guess something about that it's not recharging right or something along those lines. Now, Windows 7 is pretty new, and I haven't played with it at all, but those symbols, you know, the knot and a leaf and a battery together, it would make me think of a problem with something like that.
Yep, I agree.
What's the leaf?
Well, that's the big symbol for green and and rechargeable these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people have incorporated green leaf icons into renewable things like batteries.
Uh-huh. Okay, very cool. All right, so just try to make it go away, huh?
Well, yeah. If you take the battery out and it goes away, well, then you've at least narrowed it down that it's trying to tell you something about the battery. And then I'm guessing it's Windows 7's way of saying something about the battery's not charging right or the charge cycle's wrong. You know, and then you're going to have to, you know, I try getting on a Windows 7 forum or a Microsoft webpage and, you know, kind of searching for leaf battery type things. In fact, I've been trying to Google it and I'm not having much luck. So.
Yeah, I tried going on the different sites this morning with an insane number of combination of keywords, and found absolutely nothing. So
one of the best places to check for Windows errors and anomalies is technet.microsoft.com. That's the Windows official TechNet support page, and they tend to have pretty good data.
Okay, I'll try that then.
Okay.
If I figure out what's going on, I'll let you know.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Good luck. Let's take another call. A listener in Mansfield on line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I've got two computers and the same problem with both computers. We changed email services several months back. And now when we go to log on, we get a window that says Windows Security, log in on to Windows Mail. And it wants us to type in our username and password, but it's trying to go to the old server. So we've just been Xing out of these. There's this window, and then another one pops up. So we just X out of them all the time, and we're fine, able to work. but it's one of those nagging things. I think there ought to be a way to shut that off.
Well, it sounds like you've set up a second email account, but your computer still knows about the other one.
How do you remove that from its memory?
Well, it really depends on which program you're using. Are you reading your email in your web browser or in Outlook?
Outlook. The two computers, one of them's running Vista and the other one's running XP, and it's the same problem on both of them.
Sure, because you had the old stuff. The old stuff was configured and the new one wasn't.
Yeah, but the configuration occurred way back, and I've tried to find where that was done so I could undo it, and I haven't been able to find it.
Okay, let's see if we can find you a reference, because I don't have a window. The bad thing about Jim not being able to make it today and just being on the computer is that...
You can't mimic it.
Okay. Yeah, I can't just pull it up and tell you what to look at. His question is, are you using just the Express email that was built in, or did you actually install Outlook with Office?
No, just using what's built in.
Okay, so it's called Outlook Express if you're on XP, and it's called just plain old Mail if you're on Vista.
Right.
And, if you go into those programs, there's usually a options menu choice or a tools menu choice that will show you your different accounts. So, yeah, Jim is saying tools accounts. And you should be able to see different mail choices, and it should show you, like, whatever you named your old one and then whatever you've named your new one, and you can click on those and see the details of the account. And you should be able to tell, if you can tell when it asks you for the password that this was your old account, you'll see those same pieces of information. You'll be able to tell which one's your old one and which one's your new one, and you'll be able to turn off your old one.
I'll do a search then.
Yeah, the menu you want is tools, and there should be an item called accounts.
So I go to control panel, default program, tools.
Well, no, you want to be in the mail program itself.
Oh, okay.
So you want to be in Outlook Express or in Vista Mail.
All right.
And look for the menu called Tools and then the submenu called Accounts.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Other questions, comments about computers are invited this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. We have two guests with us this afternoon, actually three. let's shout out to Jim Irick with Sites. He's joining us by remote, I guess we might call it, this afternoon. He's chatting with us. And here with me in the studio are two guests, Debbie Fleiger and Nick Baraglio. They are with Sites, that's Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question, a comment, 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free 800-222-9455 333-WILL 800-222-WILL. I thought maybe if we had a lull here in the program, maybe we would ask you what's on your wish lists for things technological.
How broad do you want that?
Well, I don't know. If you could, come Christmas morning or New Year's or your birthday, your next birthday, what would you like to open up?
Well, I guess definitely on the wish list is a new computer for home. Our home computer that's not owned by the university is getting a little bit long in the tooth.
Yeah.
It's not. It was a very good computer, but now it's 4 or 5 years old, and it's low on disk. We bought a new camera this summer. We've got a gazillion digital pictures, and the disk is filling up, so that would be probably the one, pie in the sky dream I'd have for technology. And if I was picking, it would probably be a Mac Mini. They're selling a really nice bundle with the Apple server software on it for a pretty good deal.
And then would you hook that into your television set, do you think? You could with a Mac Mini, couldn't you?
Oh, you absolutely can. I've got a few friends that have made a home theater system out of Mac Minis, but this is our file server. It has our music files and our web pages and our video stores that we watch. We have an Apple TV, and so we can watch them off the server there in the house.
Okay.
So that would be what I'd wish for.
Nick?
Oh, boy. I think a couple of things I would like. One, I just want more disk space for my storage machine that I have at home. I have a little box that I actually got from Jim that you you just put hard drives in it and it shows up on the network and you can store things on it. And I store everything from, I think all of us at sites are kind of budding photographers. So we all have lots of digital images. So I've got, just like everybody else, I have a lot of digital images on there, video, things I want backed up. Mm-hmm. I always need more disk. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
What kind of cameras are popular over there at sites among the staff?
Oh, well, in our little group, it's a mix of Nikons and Canons.
I'm Canon.
You've got a Canon. I've got a Canon. Our office mate Mary's got a really nice Nikon, and
Ryan has a Canon.
Ryan just got a new 7D. I forget what Jim's got. But yeah, lots of disk space. We go through disk like crazy at our house too. We're trying to figure out how to do it.
All right, let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I'm calling about a little problem I'm having with my laptop, and I know it's a problem with others, and I thought I might ask you whether the solution or what the problem is. I will often be typing along, and say I do something like do a shift. The cursor may jump to some other part of the page, or I get to the end of the page, and it may go someplace else. It may choose a section of the text. If I keep typing, it will erase it, and I'll have to go back and put it back in again. Do you have any idea why that's happening, and is this a defect in my computer, or exactly what?
Well, what kind of computer do you have?
It's a laptop. It's a Lenovo. But, you know, I know someone else has another laptop, and she is an office manager. She's having that problem with hers also. It's not a Lenovo.
That's the replacement for the IBM ThinkPads. I would guess that since it is a laptop, and I assume you're using the keyboard and the – does it have a trackpad at all for the mouse?
What do you mean? Well, you can instead of a mouse, yes, it has a pad on it, yes.
Okay. What I would guess is that there is a setting that can make that trackpad select.
I see.
And I'm not sure on Windows if it's on by default. I want to say it is, but that is actually – I've seen that behavior as well on the few times I've been on PCs that have a trackpad. And – what that does, if you bump that trackpad, it can highlight things, and it can cause depending on your sensitivity on the trackpad settings, it can move the mouse around. It can misunderstand slight bumps on the pad as double clicks. It can move the mouse around, and it's very odd looking. I agree. And there should be a setting within your control panels that you can go in there and actually disable that behavior.
It should be – you want to look under accessibility in your control panels. But, yeah, I have – even on my Mac, I every once in a while bump the trackpad while I'm doing something else, and it moves the cursor to a different place. And sometimes you don't even notice that they've gotten very sensitive. So sometimes you just brush it gently, and you have no idea, and it moves the mouse around.
So would I be turning that off, or am I adjusting it so I have less of it when I get into accessibility in the control panel?
Well, that's up to you. You know, you figure out if you want to just turn it down so you can still do it when you want to, or you know, if depending on your hardware might only have an on-off, it might not be an adjustable. But basically, you know, once you figure out where that setting is, you can try different things till you get the one you like.
Okay, well, that certainly get me in the right direction. So I do appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Yeah, that's interesting. So you can set that on my MacBook. I know you can set that, and it's handy to be able to do that because you don't want it really, really super sensitive because, you know, you're you're flying all over the place.
Well, if you have trouble moving your hands and your arms, though, you might want it really sensitive so that small, gentle touches do what you want them to do. So that they make it pretty configurable so that depending on you know, what you have, what abilities you have with your hands. It works for everybody.
Yeah. This is The Afternoon, our magazine. Our guests this afternoon are Debbie Flieger and Nick Baraglio of SITES, Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Questions about computers are invited this afternoon. The first caller we had this afternoon had a question about batteries, involving batteries. What's the life of batteries in laptops, and are there things you can do to extend them, extend battery life?
About 2 years these days, I
yeah,
think.
Generally speaking, about 2 years. A lot of it depends on your the load cycles, like how often you charge it. But generally speaking, in my experience, the battery life is about 2 years, where you start to see significant degradation of it being able to hold charge.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the neat things on my Mac, and I have a feeling Windows probably has this someplace too, but you can go into the About the Mac thing and you can click on Power, and it'll tell you, it says, you know, this battery that's in my Mac right now has been cycled 121 times, what the charge remaining is, what the full charge capacity is. And you can actually watch that full charge capacity get smaller and smaller over the year. You know, it starts out about 5,000, it's down to 4,600 on this battery, and I've seen them get down to like 3,500. You know, and then it won't hold as long a charge when you use it, and you can kind of monitor that. But probably the key things are doing a full discharge and recharge every now and then,
right,
and minimizing heat. You know, a lot, you use your laptop on your lap, or you set it down on a desk with a lot of papers under it so it doesn't get good heat circulation. That actually will shorten the lifespan of the battery.
Okay. And what do you mean by, what did you say about sort of letting it all go out and
fully discharge?
Fully discharge. So
let it go till it shuts itself off.
Okay.
And not just go to sleep, right? Let it run run the battery all the way out, and then charge it all the way back up. So do every once in a while, every 3 or 4 months.
Oh, okay.
You know, it does a good job.
Okay.
And keeps it. It helps. It kind of resets the memory in it. The newer batteries are pretty good. You know, the lithium-ion batteries and notebooks right now. Those of you that have been playing with laptops for a number of years might remember the NiCad batteries, and they'd have a memory effect. And if you didn't charge them all the way back up or only discharge them a little bit, they'd start turning your computer off, you know, after you'd only used them for that same hour every time. The new batteries are much, much improved. They've got a much, much longer runtime. But there are still some tricks to getting the most out of them, and those are a few of them.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line 2. Good afternoon.
Yeah. And thanks for taking my call. My question is, I don't know what category it falls in, but basically I set up a wireless internet and didn't secure my network, and someone else did, and I was wondering if there's anything I can do about that.
So you didn't configure your wireless router. Somebody else logged into it with the default settings and locked you out of it. Am I getting it right?
Yes, I think someone else went in and just typed in a password so that they secured it under their password. I was wondering if it's any way that I might be able to go back in and redo that or how I can restore it.
Well, absolutely. If it's yours and it's your router and you can physically go in and touch it, then pretty much all the routers have a reset sequence you can use. So if for example, if it's a Linksys, you'd go to Linksys's website or get out your owner's manual and you'd read how to reset it to factory defaults. That will clear out any passwords they've set in it and you start from scratch. Although this time, of course, be sure you go in and set your password before anybody else does.
I see. Now, if I've lost the owner's manual, actually this is an older router, is there any way that I might be able to still get that information?
Most of the vendors have them up on their websites.
Yeah, you should be able to find it online.
You can usually download it as a PDF file.
Yeah.
If you can't get on your Wi-Fi, maybe, I don't know if you can plug in the Ethernet where the router plugs in. And, you know, unplug your wireless router, plug your computer straight in the wire if you're not able to get on the Internet because they put the password on it. And then use that to log in, go to the website for that router. Typically, you have to actually be able to physically touch the router. There's
right.
usually a button you have to push or power and power off. So once you've done that, only people that can get to the actual router can change it on you. So if it's somebody in a different apartment or a nearby house, you know, they were able to get to it the first time, but they won't be able to after you reset it and put a password on it.
All right. I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Okay. What a snarky thing to do. Let's take another call. Listener on line three. Good afternoon. Champagne.
Hello. Yes. I've got a laptop. It's a Dell. It's about 3 to 4 years old. And it just seems the longer I have it, the more bogged down it gets, especially when I start it up. So when I turn it on, it goes through this startup procedure, and there's a little light that keeps flashing like it's accessing a drive or something like that. And it does that for maybe now up to almost 10 minutes before it really settles down and I can start to use it. So I was wondering, is there anything other than just scrapping it and buying a new computer that I could do to help that problem?
It sounds like the hard drive probably, as a good start, you could do the defragmentation of the hard drive.
Yes, I've done that. It doesn't seem to help a whole lot.
Is it trying to load a lot of things in startup?
Well, that's, I guess, where I was trying to go. Is there some way you can look at what it's trying to load or what it's trying to start? It seems like a lot of times, I don't know, it seems to go out on the web and get these updates, and then it's automatically, saying we're going to try to load this, and I say cancel that, I don't want that, and then some other little window pops up and, cancel that, and it finally goes through its procedure.
The Windows Update procedure?
What's that?
Are you talking about the Windows Updater?
Yes, uh-huh.
So a lot of times you probably want it to go through and install the critical updates. Those generally aren't going to affect your performance.
Okay. Well, for example, it says, Solution Center. It tries to find something called Solution Center, and it can't find it. And it says maybe it's on a hard disk. You want to insert that. I say, no, I don't even know what it is. Cancel that. And it goes on, and sometimes it'll bring up other little windows where it's trying to launch something else. And I went through the updater and canceled a bunch of that stuff off, but it still seems to take quite a long time to, like I say, get ready to use.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you have some things it's trying to load at startup.
Right.
And I've seen machines that have a significant number of things that it tries to load at startup, and it just takes a really long time.
Is there a way to look at what it's trying to load at startup and say, oh, I don't want that, I don't need that, quit that, stop that?
There is, and I believe it's called sysconfig, if I'm not mistaken. But sysconfig is a tool you need to be really careful about.
Yeah.
Because it's very powerful and will let you disable things that you may not want disabled because then it won't work anymore. I'm thinking, do you remember, Debbie, is it msconfig was the tool, I think? I'm pulling up a Windows virtual machine here so I can look for you.
Yeah, you want to run msconfig.
Yeah.
You use your start menu.
Yeah.
And run msconfig.
And that'll bring up a box that shows you the things. I believe one of the options is startup items, and you can disable things that run at startup from msconfig.
Okay. So that's go to the start menu and do a, what'd you say, sconfig?
Well, you pick run, where you get to type in a command. And it's msconfig, all one word.
Msconfig.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And there'll be a tab at the top that says startup.
Okay.
There's some other things you should look for. A lot of times when you've installed something and uninstalled something, it'll leave things in your registry. There's a number of different, kind of little things that linger on that over time will make your system slower. So what you want to look for is possibly a good cleanup utility. And I don't actually have a specific recommendation on that. I don't know if Jim's going to chime in on chat here with one, but that will help you go through and clean up the old cruft. And he says stay away from registry cleaners. But if startup items doesn't help you out, one of the other options you can look at is to actually back your data up. And instead of buying a new machine, back your data up and just reinstall. Start so you get a nice clean copy of Windows.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I think a good first step would be to look at msconfig and look at your startup items, because likely you've got a long list in there that really doesn't need to be running.
Okay. So just so I'm clear as to how to get to that again. So when Windows comes up, you say I go to the main menu?
Right. You click on the start menu over in the corner.
Right.
And one of the choices you ought to have is run. And it should bring up a little box for you to tell it what it is you want to run. And you type the word msconfig.
Okay. From the start menu in the corner, then I pick run, and then msconfig.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All together, msconfig is one word.
Right. Yep. msconfig. Okay. I'll try that. Thanks.
You're welcome. Good luck. Next week, take a call from a listener waiting for us on line one. Hi.
Hello. I have a very low-tech solution for the caller with the problem with the trackpad and the cursor jumping all over. An index card, tape it, fit it to the side of the trackpad, make a little hinge, and you can cover and uncover that as you're typing. I've had this problem, and I couldn't find settings that made it compatible with my thumbs. And this worked really well. It cost about 3 cents.
Yeah, if that. Well, thanks for that suggestion.
Yeah, it really works quite well. You can just cut a little piece of cardstock and put a tape on one side. You can kind of cover and uncover it as you need to, and it really solved that problem quickly. So
okay,
that helps out.
All right. Also, I suppose just a lap flap from a magazine, you know, the subscription cards and things that are in there. You could use that. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana on line two. Hi.
Hi. I was told that I should defrag a PC, and do you do the same thing with a Mac?
You can. It really depends on what version of the Mac operating system you're running, how much you need to.
Okay.
Are you running...
Well, I've got three different ones, so could you just...
Sure. About, I think, macOS 10.5 and later is about where they started doing it. As long as you've got, 10 or 20 gigabytes free still on your hard drive, it'll actually work very hard at keeping the files together.
Okay.
Older versions of the operating systems didn't do that. They just wrote, you know, pretty much wherever there was an empty spot on the hard drive.
Okay.
But the last two versions of Mac OS tries to keep together. Now, if you run out of hard drive space, it can't do it.
Okay.
So then doing a defrag or doing a backing up your hard, you know, if you back up your hard drive and then reinstall the OS and put your data back, that'll have the same effect if you can't find a defrag program. I don't believe there's a free defrag program for the Mac because they built it into the OS. I actually was having some problems with that last couple weeks and spent some time looking. Found a couple that looked reasonable, you know, had some fairly good recommendations and good reviews, but they were all in the $30 to $40 range, which isn't bad, but for something the Mac's trying to do for itself, you know, it seemed a little steep. So I just emptied some more space in my hard drive and was going to let it do its own thing.
And which did you say the versions that do it well themselves?
10.5 and 10.6. So that would be Leopard or Snow Leopard.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Other questions about computers invited this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. No one waiting at the moment. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Read an article recently, I think it was just appeared today on the New York Times website, about as phones do more, the headline reads, they become targets of hacking. Any ideas for how we can keep our phones secure?
This is one of my little pet project things that I like to read about, so it's interesting that you mentioned that. You're probably referring to the iPhone worm that was announced and seen in the wild. One of the biggest things that you can do to protect yourself from that particular problem is don't jailbreak your iPhone. And jailbreaking is a mechanism for unlocking the operating system to allow you to do more non-supported things with it. And in doing that, you're running arbitrary code against it. You're basically exploiting your privileges on that machine to allow you to do more things on it. And you're running code that you may not know where it came from to do that. So it does whatever it does, and it can leave openings that other people that are not as nice can
take advantage of.
So that's the biggest thing to not do for that particular issue is just don't jailbreak your iPhone. If you don't jailbreak it, if it's right out from the store, then you're fine.
Okay.
But as devices get more and more complex, you're basically carrying around a little computer in your pocket.
Right.
And they have wireless interfaces and things like that that allow them connect to arbitrary public networks that people may be watching for. So it's a interesting problem that really doesn't have a great solution yet. But I think as these become more prolific, that'll become its own little market.
You mentioned the iPhone. Are other phones susceptible?
There are a number of other phones that run a Unix-like operating system, and there's a lot of phones that run the Windows Mobile. I'm not as familiar with the Windows Mobile side, but the Unix-based phones, when just like any computer, when you install services on it that listen, you open yourself up to potential people poking at those services. So I don't know of any off the top of my head other than the iPhone and maybe the new Nokia that's not available in the U.S., the 900.
Yeah, this report says that the Nokia phone, this year the Russian antivirus company Kaspersky Lab reported on a new malicious program that stole money by taking over these phones and making small charges to your wireless accounts. Pretty sneaky.
Yeah.
Let's take another call, a listener in Westville, line one. Hi.
Hello. I have recently got a computer with Vista on, and I was trying to decide whether System 7 came up, whether I should, what the advantage of upgrading to System 7 would be, and whether there's some of the software that works on Vista would maybe not work on System 7.
As far as the upgrade goes, the first real question is, how much is it going to be a free upgrade?
No, I can get it for about $35, I guess.
Okay, so it's a nominal charge then. The stability of Windows 7 seems to be much better than reportedly in Vista. So if you're having problems with stability on your machine, then that might be a good reason to upgrade. Jim is saying that he hasn't run into anything that wouldn't work as far as programs not being compatible with the newer version. I haven't seen anything myself either that didn't work on Windows 7. So I don't think that's going to be a huge problem for you.
And then over time, and it probably won't be quickly, but over time you'll have that they'll slowly drop support for the older things. Right. I would expect them to drop support, in theory at least, for XP before they dropped it for Vista. But unlike some of the other programs, a lot of times people wait until at least Service Pack 1 is out before they change to the new operating system. And I know Jim's told me that for Windows 7, he's been happy enough with it that he doesn't recommend people necessarily wait for that first Service Pack like he has for most other versions. So it might be something that you might just go ahead, and it seems pretty good. You might just go ahead and jump in and not keep messing around with Vista, because quite a few people have had problems with it in the past. Although if it's working fine for you, then there's no real good reason to spend the money now.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much. And any tips that Jim might have for us in terms of installing?
It's funny that you say
Windows
that. he just mentioned that he doesn't like in-place upgrades, which I tend to agree with him on that, meaning you upgrade from one existing operating system to another. I used to be very against that, at least on the Macs. As it's gotten more and more refined, I haven't had as many problems with that. Actually, the last two times I had no problems at all. But one thing to remember is that you're installing over an existing operating system, so that a lot of people do that to fix problems, where that's not necessarily a good mechanism for doing that. It may be, depending on what the problems are, but as far as installing new operating systems over an existing operating system, remember that any issues that you may have with that previous operating system may still carry through. So some people like to do clean installs instead of just doing an upgrade. But again, that's personal preference. Some things can be left behind. Some things get cleaned up. Personally, I like to do clean as far as Windows systems go. But
yeah. That's something that would help the earlier caller, who has all this stuff that's making it slower and slower to start up. Mm-hmm. if you were going from that computer with those problems and you were getting ready to install Windows 7, absolutely you'd want to do a clean install of Windows 7 and move over the data you need, not pull along all that stuff that's accumulated over the years.
Yeah. Somebody else called in and wanted to know roughly, you know, what is this new operating system cost? Apparently $35 is a pretty good price for Windows 7.
Well, that's actually the going price just about everywhere, isn't it?
Is it?
I believe it was supposed to be a very cost-effective upgrade.
Yeah, that may be the upgrade cost. I'd have to actually look to be sure.
In the meantime, I will reintroduce our guests. They are Debbie Flagger and Nick Baraglio. They're with me here in the studio and chatting with us this afternoon. Jim Irick, all three of them are with CITES, the Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services Division of the University of Illinois. We've got about 5, 6, 7 minutes left in this portion of the program. Listeners, if you've got a question about computers, give us a call, 333-94. 455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Have we come up with an answer?
No? Still looking.
Okay. And what's the latest in the OS, the operating system for Macs, Debbie?
Well, that would be Snow Leopard. It came out earlier this fall in September, and Apple actually did price that. The price for Snow Leopard is, I think our educational price is on the order of like $29. And that's, I don't believe that's even an upgrade price. I believe that's just the boxed copy. They really priced it. I think it was around $69 on the shelf. And what I found for Windows 7 prices as of October was the home premium was going to be $119, the professional $199, and the ultimate was $219. So yeah, $35 sounds like a pretty good price. But I believe those were the upgrade prices. The full prices are $199, $299, and $319. So that's much cheaper than their pricing for Windows Vista was, but it's still not Apple went all out to be, they knew the economy was bad. They said, we're gonna make you a deal here. Right. And one of the things, the Snow Leopard doesn't have a whole lot of new things in it. It's got a few support, but it was mostly they moved everything from being 32-bit to 64-bit, which is just how it works inside the computer. And so since they weren't giving you tons and tons of new things, just making it work a little faster and a little smoother, they knew it would be hard to justify to the users in these economic times. And so kept it the price pretty cool, pretty low.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi, I'm calling because we work from a wireless router at home, and we have a lot of problems with when we try to log on, it telling us that we have limited or no connectivity. And I thought that was just a problem with our router, because if we unplug everything, both the cable modem and the router, and replug them in, usually we can get it to restart. But I started having the same error message come up when I'm out, say, at a coffee shop trying to go on wireless, and everybody else can get on, but my computer is telling me there's no connectivity. So I don't, if there's anything I can do, if there's a corrupt wireless card in the computer.
Well, that's not impossible. Sometimes the cards go bad, sometimes the antennas go bad, and there's usually an antenna someplace in the case, sometimes it's up in the display, and even more likely then either one of those having gone bad is there's actually a cable from the antenna that plugs into the card. And sometimes those work loose. And so that would be something that unless you're really comfortable with electronics, you're going to want to take it to somebody, have them do for you. But you can typically open up the computer and unplug and replug that connector and make sure it's really tight. And that might solve all your problems, especially as it got worse over time. I think that's pretty likely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so that even though we get things saying the signal strength is good, but it's just that connection that would be the antenna.
Well, if the antenna is bad or if the antenna is loose, that's not you're not going to get a good signal strength.
That could be a driver issue.
It could be a driver instead.
Okay. Is this a Windows machine?
Yes.
You might want to check to see if the manufacturer of the wireless adapter in that machine has a driver update.
Okay.
Because that could. That's how the software works with the hardware. So if that's maybe needs to be updated.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay, and our last caller this afternoon is waiting for us in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hello, I've got a Windows XP.
Yes?
The problem is when I turn it on, I get a standalone.exe error message. I was told that's part of the operating system.
Does the machine stop at that point, or does it continue to boot?
No, it works. I have had a trouble doing the desktop synchronization with my BlackBerry. And I called them and told them I was getting this message, and they said that's what's your – it's a Windows problem.
Okay, so what is the what is the exact error message that you're seeing?
It's saying that it's missing the MINGWM10.dll file is missing.
Let's see. And when do you see that error? Like, when does that occur?
Right when it boots up.
And then it continues to function fine after you okay through that error?
Correct.
Okay. The first thing we need to do is figure out what that actual DLL, what that file is that it's complaining about, because I'm not familiar with that one off the top of my head. Let's see. I'm not finding a whole lot on it. Did you change anything before you started seeing this, or did it just start occurring?
It just started occurring.
Had your BlackBerry been syncing okay before that?
Sure. Yes, it had. And what I was trying to do today, I thought perhaps it was a BlackBerry issue. And I tried to upgrade from 4.6 to 5.0 and was unable to synchronize.
And was this the actual BlackBerry software or the desktop piece of that?
It's the desktop synchronization software.
Okay, and you were not able to upgrade that, you said?
Finally, I was. I had to go in and clean some files out. I got technical support on, and I was able to install it, but I still cannot synchronize.
It sounds like during that upgrade process, something was removed that probably shouldn't have been. If you worked with the BlackBerry Research in Motion company, I would consider giving them a call back, because it sounds like, from what you're telling me, this is a potential issue with their desktop synchronizing software, and that maybe when they were cleaning that out, they had that you remove a file that really shouldn't have been removed.
Okay, but this has been going on before I tried the upgrade.
Oh, okay. I missed that part.
They said it was a Windows problem, so.
Let's see. I'm still not finding what that actual DLL file is.
MingW is part of a GNU compiler. It was part of a GCC system. So I'm finding bits of pieces of it. It looks like it's part of
FileZilla. That's what I'm seeing references for that. Had you installed any particular software or removed any particular software before you saw this happening?
Not that I can recall, no.
And it shows up when you start the machine up, correct?
Correct.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I've tried the Windows update and installed. There was one new update, but that still didn't fix it.
What it sounds like to me is that if it's happening at boot, it sounds like it's trying to load something that's either partially removed or is there but incomplete. So you might want to do the same thing we suggested to the earlier caller, is to run msconfig and see if it's trying to load a particular piece of software that you may have removed.
Okay.
And there's to do that, you go to the start button and go to the run tab and type msconfig, and that'll bring up a box that there's several tabs, and one of those tabs is startup. I would go in there and see if there is anything that you have removed that shouldn't be on there that it still thinks is there and is trying to load at startup.
Okay.
I'll give that a shot.
Okay, well, good luck. And there we've got to leave it. We're out of time. Debbie Flieger and Nick Baraglio and Jim Irick, chatting with us this afternoon. I want to thank the three of you for joining us here on the Afternoon Magazine so much. And there we will have to leave it, and we're going to find out now what happened today in Chicago and Kansas City at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Kansas City Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. Let's take a look at those numbers in Chicago today. Futures in the wheat pit were lower. Corn was a bit higher. Soybeans were lower as well. Numbers finished up like this with a soft red nearby, down 8.5 cents. Had a top at 530, a low at 519. Settlement price for the March soft red winter wheat in Chicago, 8.5 cents lower at 519.5. May futures at 543, top bottom at 32.5. Settled 533, down 8.25. And July wheat, 554, the high, a 10-cent trading range down to 544, settled just above that at 544.25, down 8.25 for the harvest month in the soft red winter wheat pit, 544.25, down 8.25. Hard red winter wheat in Kansas City settled 8 lower for the lead option March at 516.25. Back in Chicago, nearby March contract in the corn pit settled $4 even, with a top at 406.75, a bottom at 395.75, and a settlement price at $4. Up 2.25 on the day. The May futures, 417, the high, the low at 406.75, settlement price at 410.75, up 2.25. And July corn, 426, the high, the low at 15.25, settlement price at 419.75, up 2.25. December of next year, 438 top, bottom at 27.5, settled at 32, up 1.5 cents. March oats at 258.5, down 1.75 today. January beans, $10.20 the high, the low at 9.99.75. Settlement price at $10.25, down 11 cents. March 10.27.75 the high, the low at 10.07.25. Settled at 10.08.5, down 11.5 in the May futures. 10.33.75 the high, the low at 13.5. Settlement price at 10.14.5. They finished down 11.75. July oats, or rather soybeans today, 10.38 the high, the low at 10.17.75. Settlement price at 10.18.75, down 12.75. November soybeans, 12 cents lower, $9.99 the high, the low at 9.78.5. The new November's at 9.81.5 in the soybean pit, down 12 cents on the afternoon. January bean meal futures today, 3.09 the high, the low at $300.50. Settlement price at $300.80, down $4.60. And January bean oil, 38.70 the high, the low at 38.25, settled at 38.28. It finished a nickel lower on the afternoon. I'll be back at the 6 after the hour with the closing market report, when we'll talk today with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Now we turn our attention to the livestock contracts. December live cattle, the high today, 82.50, the low, 81.85. The settlement, 82.22.5, up 17.5. February, 85.60, the high, 85.10, the low. The settlement, 85.57.5, up 72.5. April, 88.70, the high, 88.27.5, the low, 88.50, the settlement, up 32.5. And June, 86.07.5, the high, 85.77.5, the low, the settlement, 85.90, up 22.5. January feeder cattle, 95.25, the high, the low, 94.55, the settlement, 94.55, down 17.5. March, 95.25, the high, 94.35, the low, the settlement, 94.62.5, down 12.5. April, 96.50, the high, 95.80, the low, the settlement, 95.92.5, down 35. May, 97.05, the high, the low, 96.50, the settlement, 96.82.5, up 7.5. February lean hogs, 65.50, the high, 63.90, the low, the settlement, 64.22.5, down 90. April, 69.50, the high, 68.45, the low, the settlement, 68.50, down 65. May, 74.30, the high, 73.75, the low, 74.15, the settlement, that down 10 cents. And June, 77.25, the high, the low, 76.30, the settlement, 76.50, down 40. February bellies, 86.90, the high today, 84.60, the low, the settlement, 86.90, up $2.70. The Dow is currently up 98 at 10,427. The NASDAQ up 27 at 2239. The S&P 500 up 12 at 1115. Nearby crude down 63 at $72.73 a barrel. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. It's 2 o'clock, 33 degrees in Urbana. Mike Solo's forecast for Illinois and Indiana.